everyone. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, welcome, everyone. It's Dr. Terry. Happy New Year to all of you listeners. This is my first show in 2019. So thanks so much for joining me today. I appreciate you. I have a great program for you today. Now, wouldn't it be great to make 2019 the year you don't get so triggered by all of the usual suspects? And wouldn't it be nice to stay calm in traffic, get out the door in the morning without stress, and interact peacefully with life's biggest button pushers? Well, today we're going to discuss mindful strategies to keep your cool in the midst of chaos. And I know I could use some of those strategies for a happier and healthier 2019. My guest today is Julie Potiker. She is a mindfulness expert and author of the new book, Life Falls Apart, But You Don't Have To: Mindful Methods for Staying Calm in the Midst of Chaos. She is an attorney who began her serious study and investigation of mindfulness after graduating from the Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction Program at the University of California in San Diego. And to learn more about Julie and her new book, go to her website, which is mindfulmethodsforlife.com. So welcome to the program, Julie. So nice to have you with us today.
Happy New Year. I'm so happy to be with you today.
Oh, I am so happy to have you with us today as well. And I know that you also lived in Michigan, and we have so much in common. You're living now in my favorite place, San Diego, California.
I'm a pretty lucky girl.
You are. I love that. Now, before we get to talking about your book, you first came to learn about mindfulness from a doctor, I hear, who recommended it after you came in showing severe stress symptoms. So tell us what happened and how that came to be.
Well, like many moms who have teenagers, I had a stressed out brain, and I had the wrong words coming out of my mouth. And so I was concerned that perhaps I had a neurological event going on. So I went to a neurologist, and he did a complete workup, and he was a very insightful guy. May he rest in peace, Dr. Chippendale. And he recommended mindfulness-based stress reduction. He said, actually, you have too many balls in the air. You have too much going on in your brain. You have too much, he didn't say cortisol and adrenaline, because I wouldn't have known then what he meant, but that's what he meant.
And so that was the tipping point? That's what started you to investigate and learn and do mindfulness?
Yeah, it was amazing. I registered at UCSD in La Jolla because it was closer than where he taught up in Encinitas, which is a couple towns north of me. And I thought, as I was getting into this 40-year-old curriculum from Jon Kabat-Zinn, which is taught worldwide, MBSR, I thought, wow, there's really something to this. And then I got very interested in the neuroscience and in how we can actually rewire our brain for happiness and resilience. And I got deeply
tell
into...
Tell us more about that then, Julie, because I know there's a lot of strong science behind mindfulness and how it affects the brain. And, you know, I'm a scientist. I love that. Can you give us a little bit more information or explain how mindfulness rewires our brain?
Sure. So it's not that the mindfulness rewires your brain. It's that taking in positive mental states and pushing them to neural traits rewires your brain. But how you do that is you have to be aware of it. You have to be aware when you're having a positive mental state, or be aware that you need one to manufacture one by pulling up an old memory. So the mindfulness piece is the awareness piece, and it all starts there. So you know that we're wired to ruminate and to worry.
Yes.
That's why
right.
we're still alive, us primates. So worrying
yes,
and ruminating.
And also that we're more likely to focus on negative thoughts rather than
exactly.
positive thoughts.
Exactly, the negativity bias. So your brain can be kind of a nasty jungle if you think about it. So how do you want to cultivate positive and rewire for positive and plant positive so that when you have just your default mode network hanging out, wandering around, it's not such a negative place? And that's by really, Rick Hansen is the pioneer in this. He mentored me, and I took his positive neuroplasticity professional course. So if anybody's listening and they want to go literally right to the source, it's Rick Hansen, Hardwiring Happiness, Buddha's mm-hmm. Brain, Taking in the Good, Resilient. These are just some of his best-selling books.
Mm-hmm.
It's by, let's say you're looking at a sunset and you say, that's a gorgeous sunset, what's for dinner? No, it would be, wow, look at that sunset. And then you just take a moment to marvel at the colors and the mindfulness somatic pieces, feeling it in your body. Just in that moment, you've pushed that positive mental state into a neural trait. What wires together fires together. You've made a new neural bridge, and it's a positive thing for your brain.
Oh, I love that. And that's a very simple method,
it's
right? To take in the
instant.
Good.
Yeah, it's instant. I mean, it's any time during your day when you're noticing that you feel good about anything, dwell on it for a minute. Oh, I don't mean a minute. I mean a moment. Because
mm-hmm.
a minute's actually a long time.
Right. A minute is a long time, 60 seconds. Although when you think about life in general and 24 hours in one day, a minute to me is a short period of time. But, you know, so that's a very easy way, Julie, that we can fit more mindfulness into our life for a happier 2019. Are there other kinds of easy things someone's listening that we can do or they can do to?
I recommend that all of your listeners take 10 minutes to sit with a pencil and paper and literally write down a list of what brings them joy.
Mm.
That way, when they're feeling rotten, they don't have to figure out what to do to change the channel. They can just look at that list and say, oh, good idea. I think I should take a bath right now. Mm-hmm. Or I should call my friend Susan. Or, you know, I need to walk outside in nature. Well, that's easier if you're living where I'm living than where you're living.
Yes, that is true.
But there's big and little things that you can do that bring you joy. Listening to your favorite music, planning a trip, even if you're not going on the trip, the planning of the trip is positive brain health. It makes you happy. It gives you dopamine. There's so many things that you can do that make you happy that you can choose to do to change the channel when you're feeling blue.
And I love the idea, Julie, because first you're saying to do it now, not while we're in a state of unhappiness or sadness,
exactly.
as well as to write it down. I mean, we know science shows as well that when we write, we're using more senses and we're much more likely not only to remember it, but for it to make a difference. So that list, and we can put it in a purse or a bag or
right.
wherever.
Right. You can even copy it and have it in a couple places, like on your nightstand, on your vanity. And can we talk about writing things down for a minute because you
yes.
are a scientist?
Absolutely.
So the gratitude practice is so Pollyanna, and there's ironclad science behind why we should do it, it works. So writing down what you're grateful for. So I don't really like to journal, so I made a shortcut so that I'll write down, what did I enjoy today? What am I grateful for today? But I've read that writing is better than typing on your keyboard, but typing on your keyboard is better than not doing it at all. But we need to do this every day. And I fall off the wagon. I remind myself. I fall back on the wagon. Writing it down is more significant for brain health than just thinking it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I totally agree in terms of writing it rather than typing it. But I love that you told listeners, if you're not going to do it at all, then type it, because right. just doing it is so very important. And so when you said a shortcut, what you were talking about then is asking yourself two questions only mm-hmm. when you're mm-hmm. journaling or writing
yeah,
stuff down?
Instead of that, like write five things that you're grateful for each day, because I tried that and I found I was just like getting annoyed at myself, you know, and then I was saying the same things over and then I wasn't really feeling the gratitude. Mm-hmm. Part of it is you want to feel it. Right?
Right.
When you write right. down my soft pillow, it should be that you can call up how it feels to be grateful for your soft pillow. So mm-hmm. it's not just an intellectual thing. It's actually an embodied thing.
Mm-hmm. And also you're suggesting and stating, I should say, that it doesn't have to be these big things that we're grateful for. I mean,
exactly.
a soft pillow is something so simple, so small, but so important. And so I think listeners need to be aware that we don't have to talk about the big general things, although
right.
that can be there as well, but the simple things that we're grateful for and thankful for.
The other thing I do is I set an intention before I get out of bed in the morning when I'm mm-hmm. lying there after the alarm's gone off, or if I have the beauty of being able to wake up on my own. Mm-hmm. I lay there and I think about how I want to show up for this day. And it's much easier to do it for the day than to like set a resolution for the year. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yes.
Like today, I want to have patience. I want to take a moment to smell the roses. I want to, whatever it is, I want to remember to ground myself through the soles of my feet. And then I usually do a little appreciation at the same time for the man in bed laying next to me who's always sleeping longer than I am. And then I wake up. And
I like that one.
Yeah.
And so you're really saying to just take a few minutes before you get out of bed then, Julie, and make an intention. And again, it can be a simple intention. It doesn't have to be a grandiose, general, big intention.
Mm-hmm. I think the smaller the better, really. Because you want to set yourself up for success. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of the problem with New Year's resolutions. They're too right. grandiose.
Right, they're too big, and then we never are able to accomplish them. But if we could make these smaller accomplishments, goals, resolutions, we might be able to accomplish them. So again, back to other easy ways to fit mindfulness into our life for a happier 2019. We talked about taking in the good. We also talked about doing what gives you joy and writing that list. Any other suggestions?
I think people should meditate every day, and that's going to sound scary to some people, but what I mean by that is put in headphones and play a guided meditation. You don't need to sit and watch your chattering mind, because that's upsetting and nerve-wracking to people that don't want to do it or haven't done it, or even for sometimes long-time meditators, it can be annoying. So the easy way to do this to give your brain a break is to download Insight Timer, which is free, choose mm-hmm. a meditation, 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and just listen to the voice telling you what to do, and do that every day. And you might find, because millions of people have found, that it makes you more peaceful, and then you'll want to do it more.
And I have to be honest with you, Julie, that in December, that was one of my goals, to download Insight Timer. And I started the new beginner class 10 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. And I just felt calmer. I felt less stress. And
amazing?
I have to be honest with you, listeners, as well, that I don't do it every single day. But if I can do it 3 or 4 times a week, I'm good.
So here's my suggestion to you, even though you're
yes.
an expert. On the days that you don't do it, mm-hmm. just pick a 1 minute meditation from Insight Timer and do that.
So rather than the 10 minute one.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I
you
like that.
You can even
That's
do
such
like
a
5 minute, you know, you can do a 5 minute, like there's one on there that I love called, like, I think it's Coming Home to Happiness. And for people, by the way, that are listening, that are working full time, one of the best things that I've ever gotten the habit of doing, that I know people love doing, is before you get out of your car and go into your home, do a couple minutes of meditation, a guided meditation, and then you show up really more receptive to everybody in your home. Because you've left your work behind you.
Yeah, that's such a good suggestion. I even did it in my car before I went into work the first day after the holiday break. And it was only 3 minutes of the 10, but I thought even three of 10 minutes good because it focuses back on your breathing, back on grounding yourself, taking in the good. I mean, I loved it. And this is not something that I have done in my life, Julie, beforehand.
Yay.
Now, that brings up the question, what do you say to skeptics out there in terms of people who don't believe in mindfulness or don't believe in meditation?
Well, it's hard for me to believe that they're still skeptics because we've reached such a tipping point that this stuff is everywhere. Remember when those kids were stuck in the cave? It was an international, the world was riveted. The reason that they did so well in that cave was because their coach had been a monk and he taught them how to meditate. So I can't imagine that they're still skeptics, but being an attorney, and I teach a lot of attorneys, I know that there are people that aren't making room for it because they think it's new age. This is so not new age. It's so evidence-based now that people should just do it. And then the proof is in the pudding. Like you just said, you were never a meditator. You're noticing more calmness. It's going to make you want to do it more.
Right. And I just love that state of calm. I mean, as an expert and a psychologist, I've always talked about reducing stress and being calm, but it's another thing then to actually experience it yourself and then have control over some behavior, some action, some strategy that creates that in yourself. Now,
that reminds me of something. Yes. Can I just jump in and on top of you for a minute? So what you just said reminded me of something important, which is when you need to calm yourself down because you are activated by whatever, even if it's something on the news or something somebody told you or something at work or something your husband or your wife or one of your kids said, you can actually have control over the cortisol and adrenaline and downregulate your own self for yourself by soothing touch. So you can place your hands on your heart or your belly or your face where you find it most soothing, and you'll practice to see where that is. And you'll release oxytocin and endorphins. So it's like the parent-child thing when the parent picks up the baby and says, oh, sweetheart, and there's a bathing of those hormones in the child and in the parent, you can do that for yourself.
And how simple is that, again, that you have control and you touching your face, your heart, your stomach. I love that. And just even as you said that, and listeners, you can do it too. I was touching my face. I was touching my heart. I was touching my stomach to see what is calming for me.
Exactly. And if you're in the workplace, it can be hand in hand, or you can like sort of hug yourself. You can do an action that's not as obvious, so that if you're in a boardroom or you're in a meeting, your colleagues don't know that you're soothing yourself, but there you are soothing yourself and you're calming down your limbic system when you do that.
I like that. So listeners, when you're in a stressful situation, no one has to know. You can do it and have control over your own calm and stress reduction. So tell us about your book now, Julie. What motivated you to write your new book? And again, it's called Life Falls Apart, but you don't have to.
Well, it's sort of a new genre, I have to say. It's a mindfulness memoir. So the book is a bunch of stories of kind of heartache and heartbreak and trauma moving towards resilience and wholeness. And they're stories from my life, but they're also stories from my students' lives and my friends' lives. So there's stories, and then the prescriptive part are all the mindful methods, all the tools like what you and I have been talking about this morning.
So, Julie, in your new book, you talk about unhooking your parenting and doing that so that you can be more in touch with your own happiness. What do you mean by that?
Well, that statement, you're only as happy as your least happy child, is problematic, because if you have children that have difficulties, like I did, you won't be a happy mom.
Mm-hmm.
So
at all.
I need, right. So, and there's a lot of people who have kids that, I mean, I had a kid that needed to go to drug and alcohol rehab. That's unbelievably traumatic for the whole family. So if I was only as happy as she was, I'd be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important for us to maintain and cultivate a happy, joyful life separate from our kids' trials and tribulations. We need to be there to be a support for them, to be a sounding board for them, to give them whatever resources they need, send them to rehab, get tutors, hire psychiatrists if we can, afford it. If not, find social resources for them in the community. I mean, I'm not saying don't parent. I'm saying parent, but keep yourself healthy.
Right,
you
and
need
that's
to keep
hard.
Up your
as
own
a parent,
self-care.
As a parent, though, of two children, that's hard. And I know you're saying that as well, because, you know, they're having emotions and they're expressing those emotions to you. It's hard not to take it all in. So what should I do in order to unhook, in order to make sure that I'm in touch with my own happiness?
I think that you need to take time for your own joy activities and for taking in the good and for rewiring and refiring and for nourishing yourself, and also for putting your hand on your heart and for saying to yourself, wow, that was really hard, and for telling yourself what you need to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So all that self-kindness, self-compassion, mindful self-compassion, that's all really healing, because it's hard being a parent.
Right. It's hard being a parent. And I know as a therapist as well, I have to do that sometimes, because whenever I hear people suffering or hear people's challenges, I have to remember that it's not mine and that I shouldn't take it in. And I think that's the same thing as a parent, as a good friend, as a child of a parent who might be struggling with something. It's that way in a lot of situations.
I end up breathing in the pain and breathing out light or love or peace or ease. And just the act of doing that helps calm my brain down, because I'm doing something. I'm not just wallowing in it, and I'm opening my awareness and stepping out of it and looking at it. And that's helpful.
And tell that to us one more time. You breathe in the suffering and you breathe out the happiness?
Yeah, it sounds counterintuitive, but it works. It's an ancient practice. In English, it's called the sending-receiving meditation. Mm-hmm. In Pali, it's called Tonglen, T-O-N-G-L-E-N. Mm-hmm. It's an ancient Buddhist meditation.
I like that. And so we all can do that sitting at our desk, in our car, you know, walking somewhere, breathing in and breathing out. I really like that. Well, we are all out of time, Julie. Where can people purchase your book, and where can we get it?
They can get it on Amazon, also on Kindle. They can go on my website. I just have to say my reading and resource tab on my website is like a library. So it has all of my teachers' books and their websites and their newsletters. I really firmly believe I'm standing on the shoulders of generations of amazing teachers, and I want people to be able to go to the source.
So
they can,
like,
of course,
that.
Get my own book on my own website, but they can also be introduced to the richness of all of these teachers and all of their writings and their blogs and their newsletters as well. And there's a lot of this stuff is free.
Right. And I love your website. I've gone there, and there
Thank
is
you.
a lot for everyone to incorporate and read and share the experience that you have. So that is wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us, Julie. I loved talking to you.
I loved it too. I hope I get to meet you someday.
That would be wonderful when I'm in San Diego. I will definitely let you know. And again, listeners, if you want more information about Julie Podacher and her new book called Life Falls Apart, But You Don't Have To, Mindful Methods for Staying Calm in the Midst of Chaos, go to Julie's website again, which is mindfulmethodsforlife.com. You can also connect with Julie on Facebook at Mindful Methods for Life and on Twitter at Julie Podacher, and that is Potiker. As always, thanks for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here to help your relationships, including the one with yourself, be the best they can be. My personal website is Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com, where I provide you with science-based relationship advice that's easy to understand and include in your life. So, listeners, until next time, here's to your healthy, happy relationships.